to serve and to save, the servant of Isaiah 40 to 55. Hello, this is Doug Clark. Welcome to Pro. Pro brings us this week to one of the major themes of Isaiah 40 to 55, at least as scholars have thought about it, the treatment of the so-called servant songs. We examine two of the four songs in the book, as well as other passages tied to service toward others. And to help us do so, I have again asked Drs. Alden Thompson and Zdravko Stefanovic to be my guests. Both teach Old Testament at Walla Walla College. Welcome to Probe.
Thank you.
Given the attention, at least among scholars, to the servant, the role of the servant in these chapters, and there does seem to be a fairly strong focus within these chapters. It becomes servants more in the chapters following, and we don't see anything quite like it beforehand. And in the treatment, there are identified servant songs. Let's just talk about the idea of servant and the role of servant, and maybe some questions of identity of servant in these chapters. Where do we start?
We start with Zdravko. He's ready to roll on this.
Chapters 41 to 61, they talk about that person, and it is not that easy to identify that person in history, but it is someone who will do God's will, and that is really needed to do God's will toward the nations, the Gentiles, and God's people. So I have here several types of identifications. The first type is an individual, particular person. Abraham, mentioned in chapter 41, verse 8. Jacob, mentioned in the same chapter, a little later. Moses, in chapter 41, again, verses 18 and following. The author of these chapters chapter 61:1 calls himself as someone who is moved by the Spirit of the Lord. Cyrus in chapter 45, King Cyrus, the Medo-Persian king, and then the famous chapter 53 where we have the Messiah related to the New Testament. So that would be individuals. Collective, yes. Israel and Judah, both of them may be good candidates, maybe a remnant from those people. Mm-hmm. Some have seen the Christian church. Then we have an integral view that puts together individuals and collective servant combined. Then conceptual, maybe anyone whose mission is to serve others, to work for God. And finally, scholars have proposed a mythological person, simply a royal person who is expected to be a redeemer of his people. So we can see a variety of proposals here, and many of them are based on the texts.
Now, many, at least if I heard the list, and that was a good response. You've given us the reins, Zdravko, to think about. Some of those aren't directly tied with the word servant, though, are they? Is Cyrus ever servant? Cyrus is shepherd. He is Mashiach or Messiah. So
I wouldn't say that each of these covers everything from chapters 41 to 61. But these are identified, so they are
and
kind
with
of
the word servant. See, that's what correct. That would, or is it more the conceptual idea of service that might be tied to some of them?
That is why we have that view,
and that's why we have so many people who write so many ideas. Thank you for that overview, which then, of course, reminds us that it may be a little more complicated than just saying, "Okay, we know who this is," or "We've got an automatic identification." And probably we also ought to think about things we've talked about earlier in past weeks about how Old and New Testament perspectives are going to be expansive or build on one on the other. So we probably have to think about that as well. There are several places where the servant is identified, and this is particularly in 40 to 55, where the servant is called Israel or Jacob, and you included those in your list. So lots of things to think about here.
In fact, Doug, I remember a comment from one of mentors, both yours and mine, J. Paul Grove, from his study of the servant in Isaiah. He concluded that all of the qualifications for the servant, with the exception of the actual death of the servant, all the others could actually be fulfilled by the people, Israel.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if you go to Lamentations 5, even dying for someone else's iniquity is reflected there. So one that could at least, from the list that Stravko has given us, one could at least make the case that that people then could see some kind of identifying factor.
Well, I would like to press the comparison then between the conquering warrior, who is certainly the royal figure. The royal figure, typically in the Old Testament, is one with the strong right arm, whereas the servant figure here in Isaiah is a much more gentle one. Now, there's a common ground, I suppose, in that the royal figure was anointed to take care of the weak and the poor. So that was the task of the king. And certainly the servant here takes care of the weak and the suffering. But you don't have much saber-rattling from the servant.
Certainly not in the first one, and we'll come to that in a minute, but I see that Stravko...
Could I insert something in here? There is something that intrigues me, and that is when we read and study prophetic passages, we are so anxious to identify people. And that makes it powerful on the one hand and limits it on the other. At the end of last February, with a colleague, I held a seminar in Portland, and it was on one of the most difficult chapters in Daniel. And, you know, that point was brought out again and again, that we are after identifying powers in Daniel. But Daniel was after the activities of the powers, and that's much wider, and that touches, you know, on my life as well. So here, too, maybe it would be good to focus on various activities rather than pinpointing the identification. Am I right on this?
You know, I think you're exactly right. We can talk about it, and there's plenty, too, that people have written about it. But what ultimately is the point? And where do we go from this? And
what do we pick up? Will do the will of the Lord.
Exactly. And will serve. I mean, those words are important. I mean, that's why we've got them here. So, very much so. Now, that may take us to the first of at least what scholars identify as the four. And the first one is in chapter 42, verses 1 through 4. And the second one is in Isaiah 49, verses 1 through 6. So let's think about those two, starting with the 42 one. And then we might even have time to talk about Cyrus, too, because he is often pulled into these discussions about servant. So chapter 42. Now, I think, Alden, this is getting closer to, or this may be the closest of the four servant songs to what you were talking about the gentleness. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that it's pictured so graphically and so wonderfully and so warmly. What do we have for images here?
Well, let me just read it. It's a short passage. Here's my servant whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not cry or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break. A dimly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow faint or be crushed until he has established justice in the earth. And the coastlands wait for his teaching. Now, it's really intriguing when you look at that, and this is very much, it's a very gentle image. But if you go back to Isaiah 11, where we had the shoot from the stump of Jesse, it's a bit more vigorous there, because he says he will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. But still, at the first part of that verse 4, and I'm reading here from verse 4 of chapter 11, with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. So whether it is done gently or firmly, the goal is to still help.
Bring about justice.
Those who are the impoverished and disadvantaged members of the society.
I have wondered, as I teach the prophets, and prophets like Isaiah and so on, I've wondered if the focus that we have on personal salvation, forgiveness of sin, a sense of acceptance with God, if sometimes that doesn't kind of take us away from what you're talking about here, and that is helping other people. And if I'm reading the prophets correctly, on the one hand, there's a great deal of emphasis on how we relate to God. Mm-hmm. On the other, how we relate to people. And I wonder if in the quest to make sure that we have personal assurance of salvation, we don't forget on occasion this side of the prophets. Mm-hmm. And I would say this side of Jesus, too.
Oh, it's incredible when you look at Jesus' ministry, specifically with response to the questions, what must I do to gain eternal life? He turns it in service to others. Mm-hmm. Story of Zacchaeus. What must I do to gain eternal life? And he just immediately says, and Jesus says, you have gotten eternal life.
Well, and the parables, at least in Matthew, the question about when is the Messiah going to come? When is the Lord going to come? What signs will there be? And there's kind of a tracking off of that question to here's the parable of being prepared and of the sheep and the goats and how you treat other people. So, yeah, I am truly enamored by these servant songs that call us to think about, of course, our own salvation, but the role we now have in the world.
Well, the Old Testament simply is not worried about individual salvation. And I suppose that's, you know, you're part of a community, you feel a certain sense of security there, kind of a tribal sense. And when all that falls apart, I suppose we feel much more alone, and maybe that's why personal salvation is so terribly important. But even in the New Testament, you've got this amazing story of where the Philippian jailer accepted he and his household. So there is the corporate sense,
that's right,
even in the New Testament, where one person makes a decision, and there's the coattail effect of the family which comes along. And you certainly see that very prominently in the Old Testament.
And the servant here is described as someone who takes God's salvation to the nations. But at the same time, what I read in chapters 42 and 43, God's people are rebuked that they are blind, they are deaf, and they are not fulfilling that task. So that is why we read the words like in 43:8, lead out those who have eyes but are blind, who have ears but are deaf, and so on. So definitely that relational function is emphasized here.
I would see in 42 the gentleness of the servant and the persistence toward justice of the servant. The second one, the second servant song, is Isaiah 49, 1 through 6. And we do have a bit of a different feel, but there's still a role granted to the servant. What kind of emphasis do we have here? The mission? The task of including the nations, as well as a focus on Israel itself? Do we see that kind of thing here?
Well, you get a bit of a warrior here. Sharp sword, pointed arrow, and his quiver, he hid me away. So it's not quite as gentle as the previous one.
He has a sharp eye.
I
see things like, I will make also a light for the Gentiles, that you may bring my salvation to the ends of the earth. But if I take more time, I may find arrows too here. However, meanwhile, you know, we remember the words like, can a mother forget the baby at her breast?
Sure.
I will never forget you.
Great. There is something truly special as we conclude this discussion about the servant songs of Isaiah, with the reminders to think of others before ourselves and to imagine creative new roles for us as we serve the people around us. Thank you both for helping us think about that. Next week on Probe, we will be talking again about Isaiah, this time the final two of the servant songs, chapters 50 and 52, 53. My thanks to Steve Cochran, the producer of Probe, and to all of you for listening. For Probe, I'm Doug Clark.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.